On a Tuesday, my wife said it this morning. She said, shouldn't it be a holiday? The sun came out. Whoa. That's pretty cool. Welcome back. It's the Sheldon McLeod Show on News 95.7. Tuesday, May 28th. Matt Brand is the producer of our program who's very excited. We're going to get him to sing some Glass Tiger on the air at about 1:30 this afternoon. You ready for it, Matt?
No.
No?
Oh, I'm still singing on air. Are you crazy?
Yeah. Oh, Tuesday, what's up? Power lunch, a chance for us to talk about the stories of the day, and that's where we're going to start things this afternoon. Sarah Ritchie is back with us, Global's anchor reporter. She's been a frequent guest in this panel, and thank you for doing this.
Anytime.
Glad to have you back, and we're going to talk a little bit about what you've been working on, a few other stories. And Moshe Lander is in the house, and we welcome him and his perspective back to the studio. Windbag, that's not polite.
No, that's what I call myself, though. So if I call myself that, anyone else can.
I'm just a talk show host, so what the heck do I know? I'm just some guy who sits here and pretends to know what he's talking about. Moshe Lander, I don't need a ding on that, Matt Brand. Moshe, tell us a little bit about what brings you to Halifax, sir.
Well, usually I'm here every May and June teaching at Dalhousie and spreading my love of economics and my interest to the youth of Canada. And so I'm back again for another go-round, and I've got another month to go here. So having a wonderful time. I always love coming to Halifax.
And where is home for you when it's not here?
Well, I like to say I'm of no fixed address. So during the September to April school year, you'll find me usually in Montreal at Concordia. May and June, I'll be here. In July and August, I return back to Alberta, which is my my home sweet home.
You are often asked to respond to stories in the news. And among those stories, we have the sports stories. And one of your areas of expertise, as I've come to know, is about sports economy and sports economics.
Yes.
So, Sarah, let's put them on the spot. You know, the Memorial Cup was just here in town. We had an extensive bout of rain, but we also had a number of outdoor events. We had businesses saying, hey, you know what? I heard one report saying the pub was as busy as it was on St. Patrick's Day. But how do we measure this? Because we're going to hear it. People are going to say, oh, it was great for the city, great for the municipality, great for businesses. How will we know?
You don't usually know the actual details, so you will hear numbers bandied about, and they are believable or unbelievable, depending on whether you want to believe or not believe. It's not really easy to calculate. So usually the way that we find out these sorts of numbers, sadly enough, is when there's a bankruptcy filing. I hope that's not the case with the Mooseheads.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's going to happen, but the reality is that they're not really required to publicize the numbers in any sort of official way. So you'll hear something that'll come out of the Mooseheads or something that'll come out of the queue itself saying how they did as the host league. Mm-hmm. The city will say their own estimates, and the three numbers will probably be completely different numbers. So, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Sarah, I was looking, and last year the Memorial Cup was held as the Canadian Hockey League Championship in Regina, Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. found a story that said, according to the Canadian press, they had bid about $3.65 million. It was expensive, or that was moving forward, saying, bidding again. But the Pats, the Regina Pats, said they were gonna lose about $2 million.
Which I find really surprising. I have family in Saskatchewan, as you know, Sheldon, and everybody that I know out there was talking about how horrendously expensive ticket packages were. I mean, a lot of people were complaining right before and during that tournament that you could not afford to take your kids to one of the games. That's a little bit shocking to me that they lost millions on that.
I heard some numbers bandied about attendance figures, 25 to 35% more attendance here. Maybe that had a difference in ticket price.
Tickets were half the price of Regina's. So.
Well, unless, of course, you didn't buy one ahead of time.
Yeah, sure.
Someone had shared, Ed McHugh shared a story today. Ticket prices for the Raptors going into the final, if you want one. You could pay $60,000, Moshe.
You could and I won't. That's not my team of choice anyway. But don't forget, too, that the tickets are going to be influenced by this arena capacity. So Scotiabank here, I think, has a capacity of around 11,000. The capacity in Regina is probably going to be substantially less for obvious reasons.
At the Agrodome?
Yeah. And so
I don't know where it was.
It would have been there, but yeah. I'm not sure how much less it would be.
But that's going to affect things, too. Yep. The other thing that matters, too, is, of course, that the Mooseheads did well. The host team is always in, that's for sure.
Right.
But if they have no chance, or if, because you only play a round robin to determine the semifinal final, if you get creamed in the first game because you really don't belong, you're just there as the host city, then you could quickly find that, look, the fans aren't going to get behind it. And again, who's traveling to Regina as opposed to Halifax at this time of year? Those types of things can certainly make a winner or loser out of it.
Yeah, I was rather surprised because it ended in a three-way tie that as a losing team you advanced to the final, not go through the semifinal. It's just, sports goes sports. I'm just not, I just don't understand. But, you know, again, coming in second in the tournament, I think it was a good showing. I think it was a good event for the town, for the city, for the community. And I don't know, Sarah, how do you, what do? The usual canvas of the people downtown?
I mean, that's, yeah, I think so, right? And the business owners will anecdotally be able to tell you what's going on. And I think that's an area of town that's certainly struggled a lot in the last couple of years with different things that have been going on. So probably they're feeling quite relieved to have a big event pushing people into the doors.
So, yeah, what's the next event? What can you say? I mean, we have sport teams. We've got the Wanderers. We've got this professional lacrosse league, as we had talked about in the past. And I heard tickets for the lacrosse league, they were going to be around $30 a game. I don't know how you set prices. Moshe, any insight as to what the process is?
Well, I mean, usually it's not a matter of trying to fill the stadium or arena. That's a common misperception, is that you think that what you try and do is that you price tickets in a way so that you can always have a sellout. But that's not, in fact, always the case. If I can increase ticket prices, that's going to lead to empty seats. But if the increase in ticket prices more than pays for the empty seats, you could actually be more profitable with like a half-filled arena than a full arena. And so that's kind of one of those things that I know when I teach economics of professional sports to my students, there's kind of this look of disbelief on their face when I say, do you think that these billionaire owners somehow forget how to become billionaires and play to a half-empty arena or half-empty stadium? It's the fact that they realize that there's money to be made here by keeping half the arena empty. A sellout, while that might be optimal, is not the default position. So the way that they pick the ticket prices, they merely try and figure out what's the pricing point that's going to maximize the profits for our team.
This whole ticket reseller business is really kind of shocking in some ways. And we had a guest on last week talking about you need to legislate. I don't know if that's the only way. I don't know if anybody's been talking about that. Sarah, anybody in your circle, anybody that you've interviewed, anyone at Cabinet saying, yeah, this is something they care about?
I don't know if it's on the radar, to be honest with you. I haven't heard it. You know, I certainly haven't seen it come up in any legislation here in Nova Scotia. But it's an interesting question when you see how much, you know, we had a story last week about somebody who put down a deposit, he thought, for tickets to the final game and found out it was a scam. So those are really unfortunate situations. It's a little bit of buyer beware. That's kind of the only thing people can offer now. So I think, you know, eventually I suspect regulations will come in. I don't know how well you can regulate that.
You really are taking your chances with e-tickets, and you don't know if it's actually valid. You don't know if it's legit. You know, we were at Disney years ago, and somebody who worked for ABC said, here, I have a discount pass. So do you buy it with the off chance that it, you know, once the money's in hand, buddy's back, gone through the crowd, and you'll never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take your chances with those kinds of things. But yeah, it's just one of those stories about capacity. And I think you touched on that, Moshe. When we have, you know, ticket prices at, you know, whatever they are, and then all of a sudden a reseller selling them for 1,000% more, you know, they've shown capitalism works, haven't they?
Yeah, and you know, it's actually a good thing to have that.
What?
No, I mean, it, you know, when you...
Oh, we got noise there for some reason there. Matt?
Hey, Matt, what's going on?
Okay, we're still here. All right, so you were saying...
Yeah, well, you know, and that's how we know that the world is round.
Not fun.
No, the
trains off the tracks. Okay.
Yeah, totally lost.
Okay, so let's
try me again.
No, that was just the idea that you're you know, seeing these ticket resellers.
Right, and I said that was a good thing, and then I got blasted for my pro-capitalist response.
it was not a comment.
When you price tickets, usually you're pricing tickets months before the event happens, right? So you don't know what you're actually going to be seeing months in advance. I know that if I buy a ticket for Star Wars in December, I at least know that I'm going to see a movie and fine. But if I'm buying a sporting ticket 6 months out, I don't know if the star player is going to be around, if my team is going to be in contention, if the other team is going to be better than advertised, worse than advertised, if there's a playoff spot at stake here. I have no idea what's happening. So the fact is that the face value of the ticket is what the team thought it would be worth at the time that they sold the ticket. But on game day, when all of a sudden you realize, wait, the home team is going to be in the Memorial Cup final here, tickets are going to skyrocket. That's why it's $60,000 for a Raptors ticket.
Moshe Lander is here with us along with Sarah Ritchie. Let's talk a little bit about, and it's not related, but it is, polling. You know, that's kind of a snapshot in time. So by the time we hear that, you know, the PCs are gaining traction with voter support in Nova Scotia, we're like years away from an election, Sarah.
Yes.
And I noticed that there was one comment made by someone who's been a guest on this program in the past. So what we're not saying, you know, the Liberals have dropped down to 30%. Mm-hmm. The Greens are up 12%. So the Greens may have risen by 5%, but 5% and then 12%, you're talking about a substantial increase in overall gain. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't tend to talk in those. Yeah, we don't talk in those ways. We don't perhaps characterize it in that way. So what was your takeaway from yesterday's MQO research poll about trends and polling in Nova Scotia?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. You're seeing this. MQO had another poll out today with the federal results from Nova Scotia, so showing a very similar trend where the Greens are picking up the support, or at least half of the support, that the Liberals appear to be losing, which is an interesting trend in and of itself, because I don't know about you, Sheldon, but I don't think I've heard from the Nova Scotia Greens since the last election. They're not in the news. They're not making headlines, you know. And the other thing that was interesting in this federal poll as well is that Elizabeth May picked up quite a few percentage points in terms of the question of who should be the next prime minister. I believe she's at 23% in this MQO poll at this point. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, Elizabeth May doesn't have a huge presence in Atlantic Canada or in Nova Scotia. So just interesting to consider, I guess, why people are going that way. They're sort of splitting that result between the Conservatives and the Greens, and the Greens are sort of looking like the third-party alternative. You kind of wonder how much of that is influenced by PEI and New Brunswick and these mm-hmm. things that are going on.
I don't know if you get engaged with the political discussion at all, Moshe.
Always. There were two things that I found interesting. One was that when you do polling in between election cycles, there's no cost to saying that you favor the Greens or you're against the Liberals, right? So to merely say that, yes, I support Elizabeth May, or no, I don't, what's the cost, right? So if this is merely a way of trying to express your displeasure with the Liberal government here in Nova Scotia, then that's an easy way to do it, is to just say, well, if we were to have an election today, which we won't have for at least two more years anyway, then yeah, sure, I'd go Green. But, you know, it's put your money where your mouth is. The second thing that I find interesting with polling is that it can sometimes create its own momentum. If you put into the media that the Liberals are down 12 and the NDP is up 5, and that starts to register in people's minds that, hey, the Liberals stink and the NDP is good. And so when the next poll comes around, there's a little bit of a momentum effect that, because the last poll that I saw in the media said that the Liberals were down, might create in my head an anti-Liberal bias the next time around. So if I can bring an economic solution to it, you're starting to see the emergence of almost like stock exchanges, where you buy a share of Liberals, Conservatives. It's not in the actual party. The money doesn't go to the actual party itself. But the idea is that if you actually are kind of favoring the NDP, buy a share in them. And so nothing speaks better than money. Again, that pro-capitalism idea. But that might give you a much more fair representation, because the one thing we're finding is that a lot of polling tends to be inaccurate. When you actually get the election results, it's totally different.
There's a gut check moment at the ballot box.
Yeah. And there's a plus or minus 5% 19 times out of 20.
Right.
John Wesley Chisholm was the one who had posted. He said, yeah, okay, Liberals down 11, Green up 5. But if you talk about where their support was and how it's grown, you could say that the Liberal support has dropped by 26.83%, and that the Green Party support has increased by 71%. And numbers on the radio are hard to talk about because they're so boring. It's hard to talk about it. But that again, kind of puts it in perspective as to the amount of change. But we don't report that way. No one does.
Well, I think you can't really reasonably expect people to follow along if you're going to say, okay, the poll shows this, but here's the percent change. You know, if you're telling people the poll went from 7 to 12%, and then also that 76% change, that's a lot of math to expect people to do in a very short time.
Maths. We're going to take a break. When we get back, yesterday there were two former cabinet ministers who made announcements that they were running independently, and I'm not quite sure, it's not on my list, but I'm going to throw it out there, and we'll talk a little bit about whatever that was weird story that was happening with the hospitals. And Sarah, I know you guys have been following this at Global. We'll keep the conversation moving. Sarah Ritchie, Mojolander, more on the Power Lunch right after this break. We're back here for our Power Lunch, the second half, more than halfway over. And again, service sucks in this restaurant. They never show up before we're finished. Sarah Ritchie and Mojolander. Sarah is on Global's nightly newscast. She's also invested in the newsroom, very much so. And Mojolander is an economics professor spending some time here in Halifax right now. Just before we go, Raptors making the final. There will be a bunch of stories about that. I've got a university basketball coach on today who will be my expert to talk about how it's affecting perhaps the sport. It seems soccer's gaining a bit more popularity lately. I don't know whether that's true or not, but we'll see if there's some impact or influence. We were talking about politics just before the break, and Jody Wilson-Raybould, Jane Philpott yesterday, and they coordinated their news events from different provinces, and they both wore the color white, saying, you know, it goes with anything. So I think positioning themselves for the potential of a minority parliament. So Sarah, what was your take from yesterday's announcement that both women will be running as independents?
It looked savvy. I mean, the whole thing looked slick, right? They planned this out, and I'm not surprised that they're running as independents. I don't think that's a fit for them to have, you know, had the issues they had within the Liberal caucus, and the caucus was forced to throw them out. I didn't see any other real natural home for them within the political parties. So be interesting to see whether they can make what is now a pretty tough uphill climb heading into October, even for someone as well-known as the two of them.
There was a gentleman from Nova Scotia, Bill Casey, who was with the Conservative Party, left, joined the Liberals. But he did run and win as an independent, so I guess it's not impossible. But that's an anomaly or an exception more than a rule. So, Moja, when federal politics comes around, I know you're often asked to give some feedback on, you know, the economics of the country. Is there any potential that, you know, these two women in this SNC-Lavalin story will not be an issue in the election?
Well, I mean, even though you're essentially looking at national politics, all politics is local, right? So it's really going to be how do their personal constituents view them. They know that if they elect them back to parliament, and if they sit as independents, then they're really not going to have any cabinet level influence over government policy. So, you know, at the same time, though, what is it that they can offer their constituents? And, you know, if you're a constituent there, do you want to be the one then that turfs them out for taking a principled stand and was thrown out of caucus and then say, all right, thanks very much. Now you're out of here. Let's find somebody else. So, you know, I think that they have a really good chance at being reelected in their individual constituencies. But I think there's a recognition, too, that they're either going to have to be welcomed back into the Liberal fold as kind of, okay, you've served your punishment, so to speak. Now come on back and all is forgiven. Or they're going to have to find something to do. Because they just can't sit as independents and have any parliamentary influence.
Unless, of course, there was an independent elected in each and every one of the ridings across Canada.
What a pipe dream.
Hey, call it the independent revolution. Staff, this is by Sarah Ritchie, senior broadcast journalist, anchor, Global News. Staff at Halifax Hospital found person sleeping naked in locked room in March. Say what?
It's a really bizarre story.
Is this connected with some of the other reports?
Is and it isn't. So, okay. I requested documents through Freedom of Information because of those reports in late March, where there was that one individual who was arrested, allegedly committed an indecent act in a patient room, from what sources inside the hospital are telling us. Mm-hmm. We can connect. There were 17 incidents that we were told about between January and March. We can connect certain ones to that individual who was arrested based on police reports and court documents and that kind of thing, but all of the names and identifying information have been redacted. And so it doesn't appear, to me at least, that this individual who was found sleeping, as I said, in a naked in a bed in a locked room when staff arrived in the morning was in any way connected to that. He was also never found by security.
Really?
Well, by the time security got there, he'd put on his clothes and taken off. There was another incident just under 24 hours later, where a person was found sleeping in a family waiting room with what appeared to be, to the person who found them, a crowbar. It turned out to be a blade of a hand planer. I'm not even really clear on what that is or why they had it, but kind of shows a pattern of people being in the hospital, which I understand is not entirely unusual in the depths of winter, that people are seeking shelter inside of hospitals, but they are not supposed to have access to specifically locked areas. So it raises a lot of questions, certainly, about how that happened.
Did you get comment from health authority?
I did, actually. They were quite forthcoming, talked about a number of changes that they've made. They went over all of the doors and made sure that all of the entrances are secure, and they've ramped up. I don't get the impression that they have more patrols happening with security, but that the security is being more mindful to check sort of the common areas and the family rooms and that kind of thing. Still unclear how somebody gets into a locked area or why in other instances there were notes that were made by security staff saying, you know, a key was left open, visible, accessible, that gave access to the whole area. So a little bit concerning there. I think that the protocols have been reiterated to staff, but it kind of speaks to the overall system in our hospitals when we're talking about, you know, staff are overtaxed in many cases
and worried about their physical safety.
Sure.
Just a few seconds left, and Moshe Lander is here with us with this. There was a story about restricting drive-throughs and access to them to help with climate change or help perhaps mitigate some of the effects. Is that going to work?
No. No. We in Canada live in a Tim Hortons society. So, no. I appreciate the comment of the counselor that said that this is the low-hanging fruit. This is not the low-hanging fruit. We live in a country that is very much drive-driven, and so drive-throughs are going to be a part of that. If you really want to address the driving issue, what you need to do is put gasoline up to $4 a liter. That will concentrate minds about how am I going to get to work? Where am I going to live? Am I going to spend 75 minutes in my car each way, each day? Or do I want to live closer to work? Or do I want to work from home? Or things like that. The idea of saying that we're going to come up with some sort of drive-through solution, I appreciate it. That is a problem, but that's not the solution either. That's way down the list.
We thank you for coming into the studio. Sarah, what do you got coming up tonight?
A few things. We're looking at that Auditor General's report.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even get to that on this
Yeah.
panel.
So there's a few things that Jeremy Keefe will have a report on that. Alexander Kwan, I think, has something coming out tonight. I shouldn't say that because I don't know for sure if it's coming out tonight. But I think either tonight or tomorrow, Alex has an interesting piece about stem cell transplants.
Watch Sarah on the news tonight. Sarah Ritchie, Global, here in Halifax, Global Maritimes. Moshe Lander, safe travels. Oh, you're here for the month.
I'm still here.
We'll get you back. Great. We'll get you back in the studio.
Fantastic.
We're going to take a break for the news, and then on the other side of that, we're going to hear about a fundraising event to help the family of Tanya Brooks go to the report that's being released into the murdered missing Indigenous women. We'll be back after this.